This report is the latest from the World Bank stating that the economy of Gaza is on the verge of collapse and unemployment rates may be the highest in the world.
It's true that what had been published by the International Bank about the unemployment rate in Gaza, and also for the Palestinian Center for Statistics also, they published things like that. And we at UNRWA also, we can assure that the unemployment rate reached more than 40% this year, and we think that it is one of the highest rate in the world. The economic situation in Gaza deteriorating and deteriorating after hours and not only days or weeks.
The World Bank and international institutions should provide all the required support to the residents of the Gaza Strip until economic life is back to what it was before. I say frankly what we said before. If the current situation continues as it is, the situation is very complicated. It would entail a big explosion. As I said earlier, the Israeli occupation and entire international community with the United Nations at the forefront will be accountable for this explosion. المجتمع الدولي بأكمله وفي مقدمة الأمم المتحدة.
For a decade now, the Gaza Strip has been suffering from a suffocating Israeli blockade and attacks against the Palestinian economy that have destroyed factories and workshops that employed tens of thousands of workers.
One of the Israelis told me they didn't want me to manufacture. They wanted me to trade. He told me that up front. They wanted me to import food and beverages from outside. They didn't want us to work. They're trying to get me to spy for them. I had to choose between being able to travel or working for them. I told him I didn't want the factory or the life, and that I am a Bedouin who doesn't mind rearing goats when necessary. None would talk back to me. I would drink milk and feed myself. I told him to go away, as I wanted nothing. He told me that my brain is made of stone. I told him it is even harder than stone, and I don't want to see his face ever again. Israel targeted our factory in 2014, destroying and burning it. The estimated losses were around $18 million. This set us back 10 years instead of progressing. We had a plan to introduce new production lines, but we had to shelve those plans and rechannel the money allocation to repairs.
This is a structured and planned process by the Israeli occupation and those who help it to destroy the Gaza Strip until it exists no more. In the most recent war that lasted 51 days, over 5,000 shops and factories were destroyed, and I mean completely destroyed. Thus, the majority of factories in the Gaza Strip are destroyed. After nearly 2 years, those factories are still unable to rebuild what had been destroyed by the occupation. These factories, which lie throughout the Gaza Strip, are now virtually closed. Thousands of laborers who worked in the factories had to be let go, and hundreds of traders have been declared bankrupt.
The remaining plants did not survive a second war, mainly because they were prevented from importing raw materials for manufacturing, and also because of the increase in the number of restrictions.
Today we are suffering a lack of everything, the least of which is that the glucose that goes into everything having to do with food materials is now banned. The stables are checked and denied access, and they say it might be used in welding. Air compressors are also banned. Air filters, electronics, and many other items are banned. How can we work properly?
Actually, the prevention of raw materials from entering the Gaza Strip contributes to the destruction and devastation of entire industries there. How can we talk about industry while the Israeli occupation prevents entry of raw materials to factories to start and maintain a manufacturing process? We therefore cannot even talk about industry in the Gaza Strip. The most critical issue is that we also cannot talk about the economy of Gaza as long as the imposed siege prevents entry and access of essential materials.
Export is one of the most important pillars of sustainable development. The power and success of a country is measured by its imports and exports. Exports from Gaza to the outside world are an essential element of its overall development. In addition, products made in Gaza suited the tastes of consumers abroad.
Since 2006, no products have been allowed out of Gaza territory. We used to export 65% of our production capacity to places like the West Bank, Israel, the Arab states, and even Europe. We built machinery for export. We are qualified to export, yet not allowed to do so. So we work in Gaza only. We have one way only, and that is Israel exports to us while we're not allowed to reciprocate. We in Gaza must get their special consent to export.
Most workers in Gaza's factories are university graduates qualified to travel and work abroad.
In 2004, I enrolled in Engineering of Information Systems and Computer Data Program at Al-Quds Open University. After graduation, I found a job in a textile factory that worked on computer and programming systems. The Gaza Chamber of Commerce corresponds with companies in Germany and has provided the opportunity of working in modern tissue machines. However, the situation in Gaza does not allow students to travel abroad because of the crossing conditions. Harsh restrictions mean no one can travel from Gaza to Germany. So, even though the opportunity made available to me and other Gaza graduates from the programming section was a golden one, it came to a dead end. We are enduring a siege, and this affects students and graduates who work in factories doing jobs that are not related to their specialty, just so that they can afford their daily needs. Some of them are married. We support families too.
There is a large number of graduates not lucky enough to work in their chosen field, and some students have actually set fire to their degrees or certificates because they didn't help them get out of the ranks of the unemployed.
I'm 25 years old, married with one child, a graduate of nursing college in 2012 from Al-Azhar University. I've been unemployed since my graduation year. My diploma hung on the wall for 4 years. It became just like any other picture frame, nothing special. I would think about burning it or throwing it away every time I laid my eyes on it, or maybe give it to a falafel seller to wrap some falafel in it. One day I decided to burn it. I burned it and tossed it away because I was sick of looking at it. I don't know what to do now. I come here every day and look out at the sea, but I find nothing, and then I return home around sunset. Two years ago, unemployed youth like me would attempt to escape by crossing the sea. Some drowned, some others went missing, but some have made it. If I had the chance to go, I would not hesitate.
Those who managed to reach another destination by smuggling aboard a ship took some appealing photos. I think there's a hidden agenda to all this by the CIA or Israeli intelligence. The youth are broken. The first and foremost cause of immigration comes from the very depressing situation of the youth. Ibrahim is married and has three sons, while Mahmoud is still single. I tried to get him married. We approached several girls, but all his proposals were turned down. On September the 4th, 2014, I was surprised to learn that Ibrahim and Mahmoud attempted to escape without my knowledge. They boarded a ship from Alexandria to Italy, but the ship sank 5 days later on the 9th. The ship had two floors. We know for sure that none of those who were on the lower floor survived. Those who were up on the top deck survived, and some of the people on the upper floor. We don't know what happened to my sons.
Last year, as example, the number of people who left Gaza outside the world is about 10,000 people only. It means that in 200 years, there is a chance every Gazan to leave Gaza. Where is that? Gaza, it's a big prison. No export, no jobs, no water, no electricity. No life. Actually, there is no tomorrow in Gaza.
The Mediterranean Sea lies at Gaza's door and should provide the most basic necessities of life. However, Israel blocked access to the territorial waters, and that made Gaza's construction industry fail. The population is dependent on construction, which contained the largest number of local workers.
Sometimes they are allowed the building materials. They don't allow the building materials. It had been stopped for 2 months. Actually, in the last 2 months, no building materials had been allowed into Gaza for the mechanism of the UN and the PA and the Israel, which benefiting from it. Nearly tens of thousands of people. It means that, you know, another number, huge number of unemployed people.
When the occupiers blocked any cement from entering the Gaza Strip, it stopped more than 200,000 people from working. The Israeli occupation is indifferent to the plight of the thousands of laborers affected, and this unfolded before the eyes and ears of the world, with a murmur of condemnation from an international community that calls itself free.
Due to the blockade, there has been a significant increase in the number of the unemployed, which has in turn increased poverty. Many of the poor are forced to live in inhumane conditions in Khan Yunis, in the southern part of Gaza.
We are in an area of Khan Yunis called Batn al-Samin, to the west of Al-Nasr Masjid. The situation in this neighborhood is very bad. Everyone's situation is dire. This is our house, as you can see, no rooms or toilet. The situation is very bad. There are other people like us living even in worse conditions. My house cannot be called a house. Even animals cannot live in it. It is merely some walls with two metal tins on top where we sit. Praise the Lord. The situation is, as you can see, there is nothing. This is not a house. What can I show you? I cannot describe it to you. It's not a house at all, just heaps of wreckage. We live in it with no gas or electricity or water. There's nothing, not even a bed. Praise the Lord. We can't afford to complain, but praise the Lord. Just some stuff, such as dinner plates. As you can see, we cook our food on this wood fire.
We came here from Eretz to live on government land. We've been here for 8 years now. This is my house. I collected some stones and built it the way you see now. As you can see, there's no door, window, or gas. I have a sick daughter. My youngest daughter experiences convulsions due to the shortage of water. We fill the tanker every 10 days. We don't have enough to wash the dishes or do the laundry.
I worked as a construction worker for a short period of time. I took contracts worth $500 or $250 or $150, depending on the condition of the house. 10 years ago, I fell ill with some health problems. I had kidney stones that were weighing me down, and I needed to expand or open the right kidney. I suffered from a bone disease after that, and I've been receiving treatment for the past year. I become very sick every now and then. All my joints are exhausted. They're all run down. I've been suffering from poor blood pressure in the last month or so.
Ever since my husband got sick, he stopped working and earning a living. Our neighbor came to get him a medical report, but we had no money. Where can we go to get money? My husband's ID card was torn apart, and I had to borrow some money to get a new one issued. We haven't got my daughter's birth certificate yet. It needs around 50 Jordanian dollars. I swear we couldn't afford to do it. The paperwork is in my purse. My daughter's 3 years old now, and I still can't afford it.
This house of mine is made of tin, as you can see. The distance between the tin and our heads emits heat. The walls are also made of tin, and the heat inside reaches around 45 degrees. We can't bear it during summer or even winter. We also have scorpions and snakes around here, small snakes and scorpions. I took this young son of mine twice to the hospital because of scorpion bites. This is my kitchen. I start the wood fire here and I cook. No gas or gasoline cooker or anything like that. Praise be to the Lord, this is my kitchen. That's where my wife cooks. We can't get a sachet of tea. I swear we cannot. We don't have sugar to prepare some milk for the child. We can give up tea, but what of the child? This is the sewage drain that goes out to the street. The municipal water costs 2 shekels. The cube is also 2 shekels. Look at the house. It's all made of tin. Look at the rickshaw that I use for a living. I can't even carry a casket on the side or wherever. I wish I could smash it to pieces, but I don't have money to fix it, and at the same time, I can't do anything about my situation. We used to work in Palestine in 48, but the Israelis stopped this. They forced us to go to Gaza to find work, but I have nothing to do here. My work came to an end in 2004. I came back to Gaza and was never allowed out. We have no income to afford a decent living. We are suffering. I had been living in a rental in Al Nusayrat, a shed in an orchard with one room, a toilet and a kitchen. The rest was agricultural land. I used to pay $100 a month for that. After I stopped working, though, I can't afford living expenses at all. I have no money. So I came to this area in Khan Yunis and built a house of tin, as you can see.
I think that the number that you talked about, more than 900,000 Palestine refugees, that they are divided in two categories, the abject poor and the absolute poor. I think that situation in Gaza deteriorated to a level that, you know, that you will find very soon that 80% of the population are depending on UN humanitarian aid or humanitarian aid that is being provided not only by UNRWA but also by other UN organization or NGOs or welfare societies.
We get 2 sacks of wheat flour, several sardine cans, and 2 bags of whole milk from the UNRWA every 4 months. That's all we get.
Obviously, UNRWA plays a pivotal role providing aid to needy families that have grown dramatically in number.
In 2000, as example, we only provided food distribution to nearly 80,000 Palestinian refugees. Now we are reaching to 1 million because of the blockade, because of the destruction of all the economical aspects, no export. And I think that this number will increase by days, by weeks, by years, if the blockade is not lifted.
Poverty has become so serious in Gaza that some families have even considered marrying off their daughters in exchange for money, and at an early age.
Some families presented their daughters ready for marriage and thereby reduced their debts through our matching unit, run by the association that secures marriage opportunities for girls. There are cases that we have already accomplished through projects set up by the Marriage Project. There are some girls who even accepted a handicapped or wounded man to be their life partner and forewent consideration of a dowry.
The fact that young men and women cannot afford the cost of a wedding anymore has led to the phenomenon of group marriage facilitation, which at least gives young Gazans a way of ending their bachelorhood, to marry and move into a marriage house.
The Association to Facilitate Marriage was founded nearly 10 years ago with the aim of helping the youth who had the intention to get married by providing financial grants, planning wedding ceremonies, and helping them with basic home furnishing costs. This association established a marriage fund and opened the field of facilitated marriages, which was met with dramatic and substantial appeal.
Despite the suffering Gazans endure, they try to delight themselves in the hope that a day will come when unemployment will be low, the illegal blockade is lifted, and the besiegers are the losers.